As an unlicensed doctor, we suggest a prescription for one of our shows. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Fake Doctor's Orders. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Joey Vendetta fills in for Jeff Blair, and he's brought a bunch of big-name guests with him. You're listening to The Jeff Blair Show with guest host Joey Vendetta on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Two minutes after 11 o'clock, still to come before noon. Hopefully we'll get Dez Bryant. We're going to have to check if Dez is going to call in. He's all over the place, but he said he would. That and a quarter will get you a phone call. Can you even make a phone call anymore from a public payphone for a quarter? Are there still payphones? It's 50 cent? How about the Golden State Warriors? I just saw the video of them singing along to I'm in Love with the Coco. If you ever watched the video for I'm in Love with the Coco, the song, it's about blow. La cocaína. And these guys are like snorting it in this video. It's about really, 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 really loving cocaine. Apparently, the NBA is not down with the whole Golden State Warriors singing along to being in love with the cocoa. I mean, it's Christmas, so having a nice cup of cocoa is okay. Eric Smith's going to join us in a second here. The Raptors tonight, television, Sportsnet 1, radio, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Eric Smith will be on your radio. 7 o'clock, Raptors basketball, Eric Smith and Paul Jones, and then Matt Devlin and Leo Routens on your television. And Eric will be patrolling the sidelines voraciously on Sunday at the Air Canada Center when the Raptors get back to town. Eric, how are you today?
Good, Joey. How are you doing?
I'm well. You're not in love with the Coco, are you?
I must have missed the Coco conversation.
The Coco is the Golden State Warriors are like singing along to this song, and they post a bunch of vines and stuff that they're in love with Coco.
That I know about. I didn't know if you were referencing just actual Coco or something, because it is that time of year. You know, you go to Starbucks and it's peppermint, this, that, and otherwise.
Are you in love with the Coco?
I'm in love with what the Golden State Warriors are doing right now. So you know what? If they want to sing Coco or do anything else they want to do, they can go right ahead.
They're not allowed anymore. No more Coco. Coco's getting angry. That was one of my favorite lines from Seinfeld. By the way, if you go to Starbucks, can someone tell Starbucks that they don't have to just sell Michael Bublé CDs? That there's like get some Metallica in there, maybe some Katy Perry, maybe some, you know, Jay-Z.
Wait. How do you go from Metallica to Katy Perry?
Because I'm mental. I don't know.
Name drop.
Yeah, exactly. All right, Raptors,
at
Pistons.
At least give me some Fleetwood Mac then, right?
Yes, Fleetwood Mac. That's where I last saw you, at the Fleetwood Mac show in L.A.
What a great concert it was, too.
With Jim LaBombard, the PR guy for the rap show, who's just like, he's like a whirring dervish. For those folks who have no clue what like a PR guy does, it's just constant motion. The guy's constantly, I can't actually have him sit still to have a conversation because he's always going to do something. Although at the Fleetwood Mac show, he did stop for a second, but then he's like, I got to get back in. The show's starting.
He's like a quarterback constantly running the no huddle. He's audibling every play because he's always doing something.
Now, I know that he isn't, but you would think he was in love with the Coco. I mean, the Starbucks Coco. So tonight in Detroit, the Raptors are, and again, are we going to call it a trap game? Trap game. They're playing a team that may, if they lose tonight, set a record for home futility that they haven't done since, I think, the Dwight Eisenhower era, right? Detroit is just terrible. They are 5-21. They lost to Dallas, who now pick up Rondo. And I'll ask you about that later, what you think about Dallas picking up Rondo. But their 11th consecutive defeat at the Palace of Auburn Hills. That's the longest single-season home skid since a franchise record 15 straight in 1966, extending into 67, around this time of year as well.
You know, at some point, we probably have to stop talking about trap games because the Raptors continue to win most of the games, whether it be a trap game or a game against a contender or otherwise. I mean, we're talking about, obviously, one of the elite teams right now in the NBA, but I still do look at this one, Joey, and say, you know, simply from a matchup standpoint, I don't care what the record says for the Pistons at home and how many games they've lost in a row. I don't care that it says 5-21. When I think about the biggest issue, and we talked about this a couple of days ago, the biggest issue that the Raptors have had this year, in spite of their record, is defense and rebounding and matching up against other bigs on other teams. The front court, if there's one weakness, and it's been better of late, but if there's one weakness with this team, it's the Raptors' front court. And you look across the floor and see an Andre Drummond and Greg Monroe, and even the versatility of a guy who you know, you can say what you will about him as a shooter and as a player and as a bit of a headache overall, and Josh Smith, because of his size and his length, I throw him into the mix as well in terms of the matchup issues that could be presented by the Pistons for the Raptors. So this, to me, is no cakewalk for the Raptors in spite of what the records of the individual teams say.
And Drummond is a rebound machine among the league leaders and has 14 double-doubles, so you can't underestimate him. It's just overall the team is just playing some terrible basketball. But again, you know, the Raptors have to not take for granted that they can come back in every game. And, you know, that's something that will end up biting them on the you-know-what if they continue that trend at some point. But, you know, they're so far ahead in the Eastern Conference at this point. And then now you look at what Boston did, just essentially throwing in the towel. Not that Boston was going to, you know, not that Boston was going to make a run or anything, but they're 9-14. And now they threw in the towel, so they're done. You look at Milwaukee and, you know, season-ending injury to their best player. And other than Cleveland and Chicago, and Atlanta's still a surprise, and, you know, Washington's going to probably make a move or two, but this conference is theirs for the taking. If there was a year that they could go to the finals, and I know I'm being extremely premature, it's this year. They just have to bear down and become one of those teams that puts teams away and doesn't give them the chance to come back.
Yeah, they got off to a flat start again the other night against Brooklyn, but then dominated the second, third, and fourth quarter. And you hate to see them get off to these slow starts, because I agree with you. You can't continue to bury yourself and expect that you're going to come back every single night. And you certainly can't be playing that way, you know, 4 or 5 months from now when the playoffs roll around. Dwayne Casey continues to harp on that, as he should, that defense wins championships. We're not going to simply be able to rely on our big-time offense to outscore people in the playoffs. That said, defensively, in terms of, you know, points against, points allowed by the Raptors, when you look at some of the upper-tier teams, again, in their own conference in the East, but then even compared to some of the top teams in the West, they're giving up 98.7 per game. That's kind of right in the mix. I think the problem is we often look at the field goal percentage, and the Raptors are coughing up a higher percentage to other teams, so that's making it easier to score at times, and that's where you get into these shootout battles. But to go to your point overall, Joey, about the window being open or the door being open for the Raptors in the conference, I would tend to agree with you. You know, Washington's a very good team, and they're not going to be going away for a couple of years, much like the Raptors. I don't buy what Atlanta's doing right now. With due respect to that team, I don't see them keeping up this pace. Chicago, if they continue to have the up-and-down problems and injuries and illnesses and ailments for Derrick Rose, that could be an issue for a team that many expected to be tops in the conference. And Cleveland, in year one of the new big three and trying to work it all out, are they prepared, like Miami, who went to the championship, yes, in year one with the big three but didn't win it, are they prepared to do it all this year in Cleveland, or is it going to take them a season to really get things going and then maybe make the run next year and for the next couple of years? So I think you could make a case for the Raptors to be right in that mix with all of those teams. So at what point do you say, we're good, we're very good, but we do have some holes that we might want to fill? And it goes back to the never-ending question of, do you create a hole, though, by filling a hole? So it's going to be a very difficult thing for Masai Ujiri, I think, to figure out going forward is, do I keep it status quo, or do I try and tweak a little bit? Because, you know, it's hard to complain about 20-6 at this point.
10 minutes after 11 o'clock, Joey Vendetta in for Jeff Blair at Radio Vendetta on Twitter. And Eric, it's at Eric, are you a double underscore guy?
Yes, sir. Double underscore.
That's right. Eric double underscore.
It rolls off the tongue so well. Yeah. Eric double underscore Smith.
Yeah, Eric double underscore Smith. So,
hey, there were a few Eric Smiths taken, Joy, when I was signing on Twitter. So, you know, my options were limited. You know,
that's the name I
could have been like at Coco Smith or something.
That's the name I used to use when I checked into the hotel for the 1 hour rate. Hey, can I get an hour rate? Eric Smith's
Coco
my
Smith.
Name. Yeah, no. Eric Smith was the name that I would use. So
Coco Vendetta sounds pretty good,
though. I like Coco Vendetta. I think that could be a wrestler's name. Hailing from parts unknown, Coco Vendetta. So Rajoni, whatever you want to pronounce his name, because I've heard it pronounced a million ways, but I know that it's Rajon.
Rajon Rondo. Rajon. Rondo.
Now, it's not pronounced like that.
What the hell was that?
That's a guy trying to pronounce the name Rajon Rondo. So, Rondo goes from Boston, who, as I said, have officially thrown in the towel. They're waving the flag. The flag is burning. To Dallas, which I won't say instantly becomes the best starting five in the NBA, but it's pretty darn close now with Ellis, Parsons, Nowitzki, and Chandler. Adding Rondo to that mix, the question is, how does Rondo gel with his team? Because he's a guy, he's beyond a pass first. This guy, you know, there's a layup and he's kicking it out for a three.
Yeah. And you know what? If he takes that mentality to Dallas, they should be unbelievably dangerous. Because with those weapons that you just talked about around him, his ability to break down a defense off the bounce, so who are you going to try and double? Because you're going to be leaving somebody open no matter what. It might go back to what happened in Boston, and Rondo has become a much better shooter than those original days in Boston. If you remember, Joey, when you had Paul Pierce and Ray Allen and Kevin Garnett, teams often would they would try and get up on Rondo, and then he would blow past them. So teams started to kind of leak off him a little bit, try and turn him into a jump shooter, and thus by cheating off maybe a foot or two, they were able to then recover quickly to get over to a Ray Allen, to a Kevin Garnett, to a Paul Pierce, and double up quickly and force Rondo to be a jump shooter. Well, that might not work anymore. It's not like he's become a ridiculously potent jump shooter, but he's a much better shooter than what he was 3, 4, 5 years ago. So now, what are you going to do if you're trying to cover the Dallas Mavericks? You're going to try and stop them on a night-to-night basis. If you get up on Rondo, he's going to dribble past you. If you try and double up on somebody else, you're going to have a Parsons open. Or you're going to have an Ellis open. You know, it's going to be fun to watch the Mavericks. And I look at them on paper, talent-wise, and it's hard to come up with a better team in the West right now than the Dallas Mavericks and what they have offensively at the very least, let alone, again, what they might be able to do defensively. You're talking about a team that's already averaging 110 points, and their offense should get even better at this point. But they're much like, in some ways, the Raptors. When you look down at the other column, giving up almost 103 points per game, that's going to come back to bite them if they can't continue or start to stop some people. Your offense is great and all, but if you can't stop people, I think it's going to come back and eventually come back to hit you.
Eric Smith is our guest on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. And again, the Raptors tonight in Detroit, a game that they should absolutely win going away without question. The only question is, do they do the same thing that they've done against every bad team this year and kind of sleepwalk through the first half, or for the most part, not every game, but sleepwalk through the first half, sort of wake up a bit in the third quarter, but then absolutely wake up in the fourth quarter. But, you know, Pistons can shot block. Raptors like to shoot. They like to do the screen and roll. And I think this is a team that could pose some problems for the Raptors tonight. And as you said, you know, look, Smith and Jennings are the players, but they're reportedly being shopped. And Smith is the team's second leading scorer, averaging over 13 points a game, and had 4 field goal attempts on Wednesday. So that was like his lowest shot total since he took 3 in 2011. He didn't even play for Detroit at the time. So Detroit is a team that is just ripe for the picking, and I think the Raptors end up at 21-6 after tonight.
You know, it should be, again, as you say, should kind of emphasize, should be a win for Toronto just based on the way they've played. Because the other thing as well, you know, when you talk about the record overall, the record without DeMar DeRozan is as impressive as the overall record, I think. When you go 7-3 over 10 games, you know, DeRozan's missed more than a third of the season now, and you've gone 7-3 without him. And that's your, at the time, you probably would have said your best player and certainly your best scorer. I think Kyle Lowry has quickly become the leader, the best player, the guy that's really leading the charge for the Raptors. But still, you're talking about one of your core guys going down. And if you take one of those players, again, the 1A or 1B off any team in the league for 10 games, how many clubs are going to have the kind of success that the Raptors have had? And I think a lot of it goes down to maybe fly in the face of what I said 5 minutes ago. There has been better rebounding from Valanciunas specifically of late. He's got 4 double-doubles in the last 6 games. He's averaging 12.5 points, 12 rebounds. He's becoming more of a force in the front court. Kyle Lowry's just been playing out of his mind, Joey. And he's just been fun to watch, just his motor just never quitting, and the way that he's guiding this team right now, because he's not just scoring, but he's moving the ball and including guys. And you look at this team consistently on a night-to-night basis, 5-6 players in double figures. It's a balanced attack. It's not like it maybe once was for the Raptors and for a lot of teams where it's one or two guys doing a lot of the scoring and you can really kind of just zone in on a couple of those guys if you're the opposing team and stop them. Toronto now can get you 8, 10, 12, 14 from Patterson, from Vasquez, from Williams, from even James Johnson, from Valanciunas and Lowry and Terrence Ross. They've got so many different guys that can contribute, and they're balancing this attack in the absence of DeRozan. It makes them so dangerous because you don't know what you're going to get as an opposing team on a night-to-night basis because so many different guys can beat you. They're such a deep team.
I'm interested in seeing the matchup between Drummond and Valanciunas tonight, who has half of his 8 double-doubles in the last 6 games for the Raptors and has really been coming on.
Yeah, he has. He has, and I'll tell you what, I'll even flip the script a little bit on you right here. I often get frustrated when folks say this, so I'm going to be guilty of what some fans do from time to time. You look back to the draft, and as good as Terrence Ross has been, and as bright as the future may be, there's still some people that look at it and say, man, at the time, the Raptors didn't draft Andre Drummond for a number of reasons. A couple of teams passed on him because there were some questions about his motor, his work ethic, and what he was kind of player he's going to be as a pro. And so there's clubs balking on him, and the Raptors could have had him. And what have we talked about for good portions of this interview? The Raptors, issues with size and rebounding. Can you imagine what Toronto would look like right now with Andre Drummond, that power forward, playing alongside Jonas Valanciunas in the middle?
Oh.
It'd be a pretty dangerous front court right now for the Raptors.
So, no.
It's going to be a fun matchup to watch, no doubt.
Well, and we keep saying the same thing about this team because they're one of the rare teams in the league that can just sub guys in, and they're not doing it in units. They have rotational units. They have guys coming in, guys coming out. They've done an incredible job. I've said it before, but it's something that is really stands out, whether it's, Patterson or Ross or getting, Gravis in there and he's starting to come on a little bit, but Lou Williams being the revelation that he has been, and getting Charles, like we're going down the list of guys. The Raptors are just a team that has been able to do something that most teams in the NBA can't, and that's have enough personnel to create a bunch of different units and a bunch of different looks, which is really difficult to defend against.
I completely agree with you, and I was just saying a couple of minutes ago, it makes it so difficult because teams don't know who's going to beat them on a night-to-night basis because there's so many different guys that can. As you were talking here, I brought up the Raptors' numbers as a team, and even I hadn't realized that Kyle Lowry is actually averaging under 35 minutes a game. Before
yep.
DeRozan went down with injury, Joey, in the 16 games he did play, he was averaging under 34 minutes a game. The way that Dwayne Casey's been able to balance this lineup, and I'll tell you what, that in itself is a huge coaching success, in that he's been able to balance it, manage minutes, keep guys happy with minutes, and to the credit of the players, that they've stayed happy, clearly because they're winning. 20-6 certainly helps. A guy that's playing 20 minutes a night would rather be playing 25 or 30 isn't going to be griping about minutes or playing time because at the end of the day, we're 20-6, we're winning. I can kind of check my ego. I think if you were 6-20 or if you were even 10-10, it might be a different story. But you look down the roster and you look at how many guys the Raptors have right now that are averaging around that 22, 24, 26-minute mark. You're talking about Patrick Patterson at 26, Vasquez at just under 21, Valanciunas as your starting center, under 27 minutes, Ross just over 27 minutes. It's been a nice chess match so far for Dwayne Casey, the way that he's been able to keep guys fresh because of the depth of his bench and his ability then to manage different lineups on the floor. The guys that are on the floor at the end of the game aren't the starting five for the Raptors. So to the old cliche of it doesn't matter who starts, it matters who finishes, Dwayne Casey has shown that he sticks with who he thinks are his best five in each game. You might have Valanciunas out there at the end of a ball game, but then you might not see him for three straight because Patrick Patterson's a better matchup because the opposing team's going small. Or Lou Williams might be on the floor with Kyle Lowry. Or you've got Vasquez because he's got the ability to play off the ball or bring up the ball, and maybe then Lowry's better off the ball. I think the way that Casey has managed this so far has been fun to watch, and it's a credit to him that he's been able to kind of do it all and keep everybody happy.
Thanks a lot, Eric. You'll have the call tonight at Eric _Smith, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Raptors and Pistons from Detroit. 7 o'clock, the call at 7:30. Thanks again for doing this. We are going to get Teddy Purcell on the line. I think he's there. Travis, we have him. Teddy, you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
How are you, man?
buddy. How are you doing?
I'm fantastic. We're just talking a little basketball. Teddy Purcell of the Edmonton Oilers on the line and playing last night in San Jose. A tough loss, but you Raptor fan, basketball fan at all?
Yeah, I am. I obviously follow them from being from Canada and being back here this year, see all the coverage. So it's good to see them off to a good start and see most other teams chasing them in the standings.
So when you were growing up and look, you moved around, you went to the States to play hockey, and you played in Notre Dame, you played in Cedar Rapids, you played in the USHL, which isn't the most direct route for a lot of guys to get to the NHL. Then you were on the LA Kings and ended up in Tampa. Now you're in Edmonton. But as you did that, how hard is it for you to stay in touch with some of the, you know, the sports that you love when you're developing your own career? Do you still follow other sports teams, or you're so engrossed in trying to get to your goal that it's difficult to do?
Well, I think it's a little bit of both, but as you get older and you travel so much, it fades a little bit, but you still have that sports fan kid in you no matter where you go or what you go through. And, you know, growing up, me being in Newfoundland, we didn't have any professional teams ourselves, but I was always a big Blue Jay fan just from being there and watching the Jays and the World Series that they went through in the early 90s. And then when the Raptors came through too, I remember, you know, Vince Carter obviously was always a fan favorite for us kids growing up. So it's fun to see. And, you know, as an athlete, you appreciate other athletes. A lot of times you become friends with different athletes. So you always try to keep tabs on them, see how they're doing. And whenever you chance, you like to kind of check out their events too and go to their games as well.
So let's talk about the changes that have happened in Edmonton. Dallas Eakin's no longer the coach. You have a kind of a two-headed monster with Todd Nelson and Craig McTavish. And I know that Craig's going to get out from behind the bench eventually. It's kind of a transition you guys are going through. And again, you've lost a lot of one-goal games. You know, we were talking about how the player personnel on this Edmonton Oilers team in certain spots is lacking, and it's a young team. And when Dallas came in, he was, you know, let's not call it a young team. And on the way out the door, he was saying it is a young team. You're still a relatively young guy. But talk about now moving forward, the mindset for you guys in Edmonton.
Well, you know, we've only had the new coaching staff for two games. We lost in Phoenix in overtime with, I think, 0.2 seconds left. And last night we're beating San Jose and a good team in a tough building heading into the third, and we find a way to lose by one goal. But our efforts have been there the past two games. So if we play with that effort and that structure and that work ethic, you know, we're going to win more games than we'd lose. And that's not to say we're going to win a lot. You don't know the outcome of each game, but we're going to give ourselves a chance to win. That's all you can ask for with that hard work and sticking with the system and playing a more consistent 60 minutes than we have been. And, you know, I only got to work with Dallas for about 20 games or so, 25 games, but it was unfortunate the way things folded. But in this business, you know, when you don't get the results and things aren't happening, stuff has to change. So I think the past couple of games, too, we've really come together just to almost trying to get him a win too and play hard, because he did a lot of good things for our organization. At the end of the day, it just didn't work out for him.
So talk about the difference between Dallas and Todd. Quick, you know, assessment in terms of systems, much difference, or is it because you guys are doing it on the fly, you don't really know yet?
Well, you know, every time there's a new coach, he kind of wants to do a couple of new things, but like you said, on the fly, I don't want to change everything overnight. So I think, you know, we're trying a couple of different things on our forecheck, and at this point too, when there is a change like that, it sparks everyone. It's a bit of a wake up call, and everyone kind of gets a kick in the butt, because it's at the end of the day, it's our fault. You know, we let our coach down, and you know, he took the fall for it. So, collectively as a group, you want to be better. And I think the past two games, we've been more consistent, and our work ethic is there.
What do you got planned for Christmas? You get a bit of a break. What are you doing?
We do. Unfortunately, we play we only get 2 days. We play on the 23rd, and then we play again the 27th in Calgary. So I would like to go home and see my family, but Newfoundland's too far of a flight to travel that far for 3 days. So I'm going to have some family come up to Edmonton, and we'll spend it out west this year.
So when you ended up leaving, if Tampa, and you got traded, and you got traded for Sam Gagner, and you ended up in Edmonton from Tampa, how much, like, what was the change in wardrobe? 50%, 80%?
105%. But it was fun. I was spoiled in Tampa, and coming from LA, I didn't have much winter clothes at all, and I got all my clothes shipped up, you know, this summer when I got traded, and it was nice in Edmonton in the summertime, and kind of got the worst some of the clothes, and then about right around Halloween, it changed in a hurry, and I had to go get a whole new winter wardrobe, which was kind of fun, but I'll definitely miss some of those short days coming up here in the long winter.
So it wasn't an issue that a bunch of your Speedos got held up at customs.
Exactly, the tight one. So hopefully I don't gain any weight for when I go back to Tampa this summer.
And before we let you go, Teddy Purcell again is our guest. Teddy Purcell, excuse me. I always mispronounce it, because it's like you hear different announcers say it different ways. So it is Teddy Purcell. And if folks want to follow you on Twitter, it's at TeddyPurcell16. Before I let you go, what's on the iPod these days? What music are you listening to?
I'm big into, I've always been a Pearl Jam fan, so they're always on there. But I'm listening to Local Natives a lot. I'm kind of like alternative, so I like that. A good band from Newfoundland that are up and coming, there are a couple of new albums out. They're called Hey Rosetta. I'm a big fan of those guys too. So I kind of like to mix it up. And a lot of flights out here in the West. I'm realizing the travel is a little bit tougher, so there's a lot of time to listen to some tunes.
Teddy, thanks for doing this, and have a great holiday season, and we'll talk to you soon.
You too, Joey. Thanks for having me on.
All right, man. Teddy Purcell of the Edmonton Oilers. Sarah Purcell was someone that I used to watch on television, and that's where the confusion comes in. 11:27, Joey Vendetta in for Jeff Blair. On this Friday, 6 days before Christmas. Hard to believe. Better get it going, as the players like to say. Better get it going. If you're heading out, -3 today, feels like -10, -2 tomorrow, 1 on Sunday, and then gets a little warmer next week, but looks like we may get some snow on Christmas. Up next, we are going to wrap up the show. Who knows? Des Bryant may call in. He may not. But I guarantee that we're going to have the first super agent, the guy that the movie Jerry Maguire was modeled after. He was a consultant on the movie. He will join us next on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Now Jeff Blair can tell you bedtime stories. Subscribe to podcasts of The Jeff Blair Show at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher, and listen anytime you want. Sweet dreams. Sportsnet 590, The Fan on demand.
Hey, Cuba Gooding Jr. here, and you're listening to Joey Vendetta
on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Wrapping up the program, Vendetta in for Blair, joined now by the man that wrote a new book called The Agent, My 40-Year Career Making Deals. You can get it on Amazon.com and a bunch of other places. Lee Steinberg joins us right now. Always a pleasure to have him on the program. The original super agent. And Lee, thank you very much for doing this, as always. And if you want to follow him on Twitter, at Lee Steinberg, founder of Steinberg Sports and Entertainment, 40-plus years repping athletes, brands, and celebrities, and a man who, as you see on his Twitter feed, treasures relationships. Before we talk sports and specifics, talk about those relationships, Lee, that you've made over your career, and how that trust factor is so important when you're representing people.
We are in the world of football, baseball, basketball in a very oral world. So people have to trust each other. When you do a deal with an owner or general manager, there has to be a underlying relationship where you know that you'll protect each other at a certain level. In terms of athletes, it's so key to have gone through an experience working for a player to get drafted high, working on his negotiation, to really know and understand, to get into someone else's heart and mind and understand what truly motivates them. So we all say things on the surface that sound politically correct, but what does someone really want? What will it take to fulfill them?
And do you help them realize what it is that will fulfill them? Like, give us some examples. You, as we've said, you've repped some of the biggest athletes in the history of sports, and at times, I imagine you've had to butt heads with them because they maybe wanted something that was ridiculous, or maybe they were doing something, you know, cut their nose off to spite their face. Like, I mean, it has to be at times a, I won't say confrontational, but you definitely at times have to call them out, right? I mean, it's not, you're not doing it in front of anybody.
The inherent problem with agency is that most agents would allow the most deluded thoughts ever to enter an athlete's mind, to have sycophants and posses around them that will give them totally unrealistic goals. And so most agents will go along with that. A player could be standing on a 90-story building on the ledge about to jump, and he would have friends around him saying, law of gravity doesn't apply to you. You can go ahead and fly. So it's the inherent part of representing someone is trying to guide them towards what their best interests are. So if you first meet someone, then you ask them to sit and think about how important long-term economic security, short-term economic gain, money that will come right now, family, geographical location, prominence, profile, endorsements, and then the sports considerations of being on a winning team, the quality of coaching, being a starter. How critical are each of those factors? Can you prioritize what's really motivating you?
So over the course of your career, you represented everyone from Steve Young to Troy Aikman, Warren Moon, Bruce Smith, Thurman Thomas, the list goes, Oscar De La Hoya, Lennox Lewis, Dusty Baker, Ricky Williams. You've represented some opinionated athletes, you know, like a Ricky Williams, a guy that marched to the beat of his own drummer and did things his own way, who was an incredible athlete. And you look at what's gone on today with sports rights fees and how much money is on the table, and you look at, for example, what went on in Ferguson and how the athletes, you know, are wearing T-shirts or protesting. I mean, LeBron and Miami, when he was in Miami, wore the hoodies to protest what happened with Trayvon Martin. You know, guys are wearing I Can't Breathe T-shirts. The social consciousness level of athletes has gone up exponentially in the last 5 to 10 years. It was always there. There were athletes, you know, look, Jim Brown was always politically active and as far as black rights goes and being a guy that was a proponent of athletes, but it's really pronounced now. Everyone's getting into the act. How do you think things have changed in the last 40 years over the course of your career? And I'm sure you cover that partially in your book as well, but in your opinion, how do you think things have changed?
Well, first of all, you have an amount of money involved in sports that is exponentially larger. So a franchise that, like the Dallas Cowboys, was bought for $140 million by Jerry Jones. It's now worth $3.2 billion. We have the development of brand-new stadia with luxury boxes and sponsorships and naming rights. We have 40 million people a year in the U.S. playing fantasy football. We have the development of social media. And one of the keys is that there is no right to privacy anymore for an athlete. So the ubiquitous nature of the cell phone means that they can be anywhere at any time, and whatever their action is immediately appears on the Internet. And they have to be so careful about their behavior and so careful about public impression that it raises a new level of risk. So we've had to adjust in terms of that. What stayed consistent is, as you know, in our practice, we've always asked athletes to be role models and to go back to the high school, college, and professional community and put together programs that will enhance the quality of life. So a high school scholarship fund, a collegiate scholarship fund, work done just put the 139th single mother into the first home she'll ever own in a program called Homes for Holidays by making the down payment and having Home Depot outfit it. So that part has remained the same. The level of celebrity, the level of fame, the level of scrutiny has gone sky high.
What do you make of the confluence of music and sports? And by that, I mean, you look at somebody like Jay-Z and Rock Nation Sports, which has branched out from music into sports. What's your take on that?
This has been going on for quite some time, where the entertainment industry, which is television, reality TV, dramatically scripted, original programming, music, motion pictures, have all become part of entertainment, and athletes and sports have become part of that. So we're in the entertainment business. So the reality is that whether it's Rock Nation, one of the studios in Los Angeles, a big entertainment agency, they're all getting into sports representation. They're just seeing sports as a different form of entertainment, and it's all content. It's all something that can go into not just endorsements, but can go into those multiple platforms, can be television programming, sports theme, motion pictures do very, very well. I just had lunch with John Hancock, who did The Blind Side, which has now replaced our movie Jerry Maguire as the highest grossing film ever. And in representation, you're seeing major mega powers with lots of investment dollars go into that field. And this has been going on really for about 15 years.
So, Lee, the book's called The Agent. Like I said, you can get it on Amazon. You can get it in bookstores. Give us the biggest deal you ever negotiated in your career.
Numerically, it's not the biggest, but when I did Steve Young back in 1984, the USFL and the NFL were in conflict, and the USFL was spending amazing amounts of money trying to get the biggest stars out of college to go into their league. So at that time, the biggest deal had been about $1 million a year, and the LA Express paid Steve Young $42 million for 4 years. And it made headlines all around the world, newspapers in Japan. It led off Dan Rather's news, and it was seen as sports economics run amok, which was ironic because Steve Young was about the least materialistic person in the world. But that deal, which I did, followed by a couple weeks Warren Moon coming back into the NFL after having played in Edmonton and being the highest-priced NFL player. So that was a pretty hot one, too.
And in the book, you detail, and before we let you go, I have to touch upon this, you detail your recovery, right? You're sober, and your comeback, and you were a guy that rode to the top, and we know that, you know, as I like to say, and not that this was the case with you completely, but when you go to the candy store, sometimes you get some cavities, you know, and you're a guy that has done everything in sports. You passed on the chance to represent Peyton Manning. You had your struggles, and now you've been sober. And talk about that part of your life and how important that has been.
So really my life went in reverse because by the end of it, I'd represented 60 first-round draft picks in the NFL, the very first pick in the first round 8 times, half the starting quarterbacks, 7 Hall of Fame players. We had a huge baseball practice, wrote a couple best-selling books, had a movie where the director followed me for a couple years. It was the highest grosser. And then I went through some challenging times in my personal life and made the gross mistake of turning to alcohol. And so I had to go through a long period of putting all of that aside, putting my practice aside, and just focusing on the concept of being sober and trying to be a good parent. And now, you know, I'm towards the end of the fifth year of sobriety, and every day is a blessing.
Well, thank you for doing this. It was a blessing to have you on the show. Have a Merry Christmas, a Happy New Year. Once again, the book is on Amazon. It looks like it's going to be, you know, a fascinating read. It's a bestseller in the New York Times, and it's called The Agent, My 40-Year Career Making Deals and Changing the Game. Leigh Steinberg and Michael Arkush writing the book. Leigh, thanks a lot for doing this.
My pleasure.
Great to have him on the show. 11:50, 10 minutes before noon. Hockey Central, Darren Millard, John Shannon, Glenn Healy hosting. At 12:15, they will have Gerard Gallant, head coach of the Florida Panthers, who a few nights ago participated in the longest shootout in NHL history with 20 rounds. 20-round shootout. And they won. Nick Bjugstad scoring in the 20th round. Tonight, right here on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Raptors basketball. The Raptors 20-6 versus the 5-21. Almost a diametrically opposed record. Detroit Pistons team. Eric Smith, Paul Jones with the call right here. And then on your television, Sportsnet 360, we will have the game. Matt Devlin, Leo Routens. 7 p.m. on Sportsnet Ontario, Friday Night Hockey, Peterborough and Kingston. And 11 o'clock on Sportsnet 360, Hockey Central. Tonight, Brad Fay, Gord Stellick, and P.J. Stock. NHL games tonight, Tampa Bay at New Jersey, Anaheim at Ottawa, New York at Detroit, and Boston at Winnipeg. So thanks again for listening. I'm Joey Vendetta in for Jeff Blair. Won't be in next week, but we'll be back on the 29th and the 30th. You can hit me up on Twitter, at Radio Vendetta. Thanks for all the comments, positive and otherwise. And a special thanks to our fabulous production crew, Derek Brandale, operating the oven mitts that he uses to press all the buttons. And, of course, Travis McKenzie. I'm Vendetta out, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Jeff Blair loves to commute. Let him join you on yours. Subscribe to podcasts of The Jeff Blair Show at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590, The Fan, on demand. On demand. On demand. On demand. On demand.